So we are in the last portions of this book where he's talking about obstacles. See, we have studied about meditation, the technique, the benefits, what to meditate on, and who I am, all that. But now he's talking about progress halting ruts. And so last week we had talked about vasanas, desires, which make the mind run outwards, and the mind is the main obstacle in meditation, as we all know. And whenever we sit, it's the mind that creates all the problems. We all know that. And so last week he had talked a little bit about these progress halting ruts that cause the mind to run outwards. And today we will continue that same journey. And it's called mental dancings. So this is the chapter we will do today, why the mind dances and what we can do to reduce that. And then this topic will go, how to control the mind, will be done in more detail in January in the next class. But today we shall do some preliminary studies. So what is making the mind dance? So this is, there are four things. Vasanas lead to desires, lead to thoughts, lead to actions. I'll come to the story. And then actions lead to bondage and more vasanas. So vasanas cause desires in the intellect, thoughts in the mind, actions at the body level. Actions lead to attachment. And what that does, creates more vasana. So it's a vicious cycle. Vasana, intellect, mind, body, attachment, vasanas, and so on and on. And that's how we have been getting ourselves caught in these problems for multiple lifetimes. So, but now that we have this knowledge, how do we go about it? And what is the main problem? Why does vasanas create problems? Because vasanas create bondage and we need to detach. So I'll talk a little bit more in detail, but I thought talking about desires and vasanas had this beautiful story. So talking about desires, there were these two panhandlers. You know, panhandlers, they stop on the street and put a sign and ask you for money. So one's name was Juan and one was Carlos. And they both really wanted, you know, to make money and take care of their family, you know, because they were very, very poor. And so they said, they couldn't get a job. So they said, okay, we'll just stand on the street corner and beg. And Juan would spend all day and shift, was in a big city, shift from one street corner to another and end up at the day with $5, $7, $9, that's it. And he couldn't support his family. And the Carlos every day would have his pocket filled with $10 bills, filled. How did you do that? And soon Carlos had so much money, he bought a house and he was driving a Mercedes. But still every day he would go to a different street corner, carry a sign and beg, asking for money. So one day Juan asks Carlos, he says, how do you make so much money, you know, just panhandling? I spend all day, I carry this sign and nobody gives me anything. I'm lucky if I get $7 or $9. He said, what does your sign say? Juan says, well, you know, my sign says, I have 6 kids, no food, please help. And nobody helps me, you know, the 6 kids, no food, please help. So he said, okay. So then Juan asks Carlos, what sign do you have? How do you make so much money? How are you able to, you know, be so successful, get so much? He says, look at my sign. The sign says, I need only $10 more to go back to Mexico. So we have different ways to satisfy our desires. So that is the essence of the story. So vasanas are our tendencies that we have accumulated over many lifetimes. It leads to desires in the intellect. Desire leads to thoughts in the mind, agitation. And then that leads to action, thinking that by getting that object, I will be happy. And what does that do? When I get it, I get more happy, then I want more. If I don't get it, I get angry and I want to take it from others. So either way, it strengthens the vasana. So it is a vicious cycle. And that ultimately leads to bondage, where I now depend on this object or this person or this thing, and so I get bound. Without this thing, I'm helpless. Without this thing, I'm hopeless. Without this thing, I'm miserable. So all the time I'm thinking of sense objects, and my mind is flooded with desires, and then I can think of nothing else. And it could be any desire. It could be a desire for money. It could be a desire for alcohol. It could be a desire for sense pleasure. It could be desire for more power, more wealth, more golf, you know, anything. But desires are not bad, but when they take over, where your mind can no longer think rationally, that's when it creates problems, and that is bondage. That is when I become so dependent either on that person, like without this person my life is useless, so I'll do anything to get the person. And we have instances of people where actually they have committed murders to get the person they wanted. Recently, this couple, you know, she was seeing another man, and so that man shot the lady's husband so he could marry the wife and live happily. And what happened? They both are ended up in jail for 25 to 40 years. So that is bondage. So the solution is detachment. Now, detachment, people think of it as pessimistic defeatism, you know, person who can't get anything, then he becomes detached, you know, because he couldn't become successful in the world, so he became a monk or a priest and he's just sitting there and not doing anything. But detachment is not pessimism, it is not defeatism, it is a healthy relationship with objects and beings. See, as I said, one is a dependence, and that is unhealthy. Healthy is that if I have it, it's good, I'll make good use of it. If I don't have it, I'm still fine. So it does not mean you don't work to get what you want, but you detach from anything that will take me away from my goal. And that is called a healthy relationship, where if it helps me in my spiritual pursuit, yes, I will carry it. If it not, I'll drop it, like an Olympic athlete. Now, he wants to win the Olympics. So 8 years before, he starts competing, and then he eats healthy, and he'll avoid sugars, he'll avoid, you know, unhealthy foods, he will avoid alcohol, smoking, drugs, going out late, parties, all those things he avoids. And he detaches from things that are taking him away and doing things that will take him towards the path. Exercise, lifting weights, regular running, get a good coach, eat healthy. So his goal is 8 years from now, I have to win the Olympics. So he detaches from what will take him away and attaches to what will help him. So similarly, a spiritual seeker, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, the individuality, the body, mind, intellect, if it's under the influence of vasanas, it gets attached into the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts, and that takes him away from his spiritual goal. So detaching from the objects and turning towards my goal of Om, of realization, of knowing God or reaching God. So that is healthy detachment, where whatever is an obstacle, first of all, my goal should be divine. We had talked about last time, it should be a higher goal. And whatever takes me away from that goal, I should go away from. So for a spiritual seeker, again, things like selfishness, anger, greed, jealousy are taking me away. And association with other seekers, reading good books, praying, regular meditation takes me to that higher goal. So detach from the lower and attach to the higher. Yes.
You can do something, but if you are just unhappy about this inequality in the world, then maybe...
I think that was the point I was getting to. Just pointing out, you know, there are discrepancies in society. There are problems. If you can do something about it, do it. If you cannot, also part of her may be still missing that life that she gave up. I don't know if that is that the case. Does she think? You don't
absolutely
think?
Not.
She has no, absolutely no. Otherwise, sometimes they look at
she's
others.
She's angry because she
yeah. Right.
Blew out.
So see, anger is again hurting her. And also she's spreading that negativity to everybody whom she gets the post. What she can do is she can, in her own way, if she's an example, try to educate people, try to spread this message with love. But overnight to change society is not possible. Or at least she can change the village where she is. You know, maybe the people who are there are well off. She can convince them. if they respect her to donate. So not every one of us can be like Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or Swami Chinmayananda, but in our own way we can be a little lamp in our own village or our own community or our own society. So that she can do, but anger is just hurting herself. It's making her more miserable, and when anger hurts not only you but hurts everybody around you. So anger is wrong. I mean, educating people is good about this inequality and all. If she can do that, maybe she can stand for election. You know, if she's that good, if she's working that well, maybe in that whole community she's well known, she could become a counselor or something, or set up an organization which will work actively for removing poverty. But just being angry doesn't serve any purpose, I think, because anger only hurts you inside first.
My point is that I do understand the point, and therefore I try to
help her.
A few other people do.
Right. So that's what I said, you know, using the positive values and thoughts rather than anger or hatred or, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but then again, I want to relate it to the attachment
detachment. Right, right. So she's not, you know, so her detachment is from the world, but she's still letting the world get into her head and influence her to a point where it's disturbing her peace of mind. And ultimately, my peace of mind only I can protect. And the first thing is, if your mind is not peaceful, you cannot help anybody else. Like if I'm talking about meditation, if I'm not peaceful, then my talks will be worthless. So, yeah, so the negative vibrations are very wrong. And that's what they say. So everybody in this world is looking for happiness. Some people find happiness in drugs. Some people find it in contact with the opposite sex. Some in alcohol. Some with power. Some with money. Some with, you know, doing social work. And that is all good. But ultimately, one should realize that I do what is good, but ultimately the source of happiness is within. If you do not have peace of mind within, then you cannot spread peace of mind outside. So happiness first has to come from within, from the Lord's presence. Once you have connected with that, then you can serve the world, then you can help the world. So it's more important to go inward, and that's why we recommend meditation, because in meditation you quieten the mind, turn it inward, and contact the inner Lord, the inner presence. And once you have that silence, that peace, that contact, then you can become helping a lot of people. But if you're, I mean, anger could be good if you channel it in the direction of service. But if you're just angry in general, but sometimes an anger is, okay, this thing, a situation is not good, I need to fix it. But at the same time, the anger should not be disrupt my mind. So it should be come out of inner silence, inner peace. And once you do that, then your success is more guaranteed as opposed to just working from anger. And so on this path, we need sincerity and urgency. Because each of us has a limited lifetime. I don't know how long I will live. Maybe 10 years, 20 years. Sooner or later, we have to go. So sincerely and urgently, I have to decide that my goal in this life is to know God, or reach God, or become one with God. And complete faith in God. First of all, that there is God. Second is faith in the scriptures, which have been revealed to us by prophets. It's great saints and prophets who have revealed to us the scriptures. So faith in God, faith in the prophet, faith in scriptures. Then faith in my guru or my teacher, whoever I have adopted as my spiritual guide, knowing that, yes, this person can help me on my spiritual journey. So faith in God, faith in the prophet, faith in the scriptures, faith in the teacher. Four. And five, most important, is faith in myself. That if all these other spiritual masters also were living in the same human body as you and I, they had the same mind, the same intellect, and still if they were able to overcome and reach Om or the God, then why can't I do it? So faith in my abilities, that I can do it. If all of these can do it, I can also do it. So that faith is very important, and faith is not only a blind faith, but faith accompanied by knowledge. That's why we say read the scriptures and then develop a firm faith which nothing can shake. And we look in the lives of these great saints. They had so many problems. Mirabai, Jesus, even the Sikh gurus, they had so many problems from Muslims and all that. But their faith was not shaken, because they said, there is God who will take care of me. And so irrespective of as many problems, Krishna says in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, a person who has this kind of faith in God, then even the mountain of sorrows fall on him, he is unperturbed. So he or she has so much faith in God. And to control our mind, they say we need to do three things. One is negate negativities. If a negative thought comes, if a selfish thought comes, if a desire-prompted thought comes, if an angry thought comes, jealous thought comes, hateful thought comes, selfish thought comes, immediately negate it. No, I have to be very alert. I should make sure none of these thoughts come. Because objects will come and will create a desire or will create negativity. But I should make sure that my mind is turned towards higher. So I should negate any such thoughts before they become actions. Yes.
How do you negate a thought?
That's a good question. So by negating a thought, by asserting a positive thought. You put a positive thought in place of a negative thought. That this particular thought is going to lead to a negative desire, which is going to lead to a negative action, is going to take away from my path. So when my goal is clear, then I say, this is something I do not want to entertain. Thought comes from within. Who gives power to the thought? I do, right? Because I am alive, I have thoughts. If I'm dead in complete coma or deep sleep, there's no thoughts. So when I create the thoughts, then I give power to the thoughts. So knowing that I have created the thoughts, so that is very important. Who creates the thoughts? Somebody else doesn't put thoughts in my head. Yes, the media will give us that, but it's up to us how much we give importance. So negate the negative and say, at this moment, I'm not going to think, and assert positive.
By I, you mean mind or intellect?
Mind. Mind has the thoughts, but the intellect with the right judgment will say, okay, we are not going to at this moment think about it, whether it's in meditation or whether a negative thought comes. Substitute with a positive thought. Instead of desire, substitute contentment. Instead of anger, substitute love.
In this chart, we are seeing thought below intellect.
No, that is thinker of thoughts. But in the scheme of things, intellect gets desires and the mind gets thoughts. Even though mind has emotions, but when the cycle of action comes, it is vasanas create desires. Desires create, or you can say it creates a thought. And then that creates desire in the mind. You can even put it that way. So the thought comes, so that leads to desire. So when these negative desires, negative thoughts come, with the intellect, I should be able to reject.
I think I've really struggled with that distinction between mind and intellect. It's almost like your body does the feeling.
Right.
You know, it's the animal.
Right. Which is fine, yeah.
Well,
but the intellect is the discriminating power which decides what is right, what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. So the intellect is the decision-making power.
Okay, could you give me an example?
But the intellect, it's not that money will make you unhappy, but money should be earned rightly, honestly, correctly. That's where the intellect comes in. Are you cheating others to earn money or are you earning it the right way? That's where the intellect comes. Number two, I should not be a hoarder of money. A certain percentage, if the society has given me so much, certain percentage of my money should be used to help others, should be used in charity. So when you do that, when you are able to part from money freely and happily, then you are exerting your mastery over money. Otherwise, money is controlling me.
Give a direction to the need for the money
It should be spent. And then, yes, I need certain amount for my maintenance, for my comfort, for my retirement. But if I have extra, I should count. Even if I have a decent amount, some amount of charity, even if it's $1 or $5, even if you can do a month, you know, whatever little I can do, doing some amount of charity constantly, then you exert mastery over money. Otherwise, money becomes my master. I have to have it without it. And same thing, it could be an alcohol. Like an alcoholic, every time he walks by a bar, he has to go in and buy a drink. But once he goes to AA and realizes that drinking is harming my family, my liver, So he walks by the bar and says, no. Even his friends say, come on, buddy, come on in. No, I'm not going to. That's where the intellect comes in. Intellect which is fed by right knowledge from the scriptures. So intellect is the discriminating capacity. And the third thing is flood your heart with positive values. So the heart should constantly, through reading the scriptures, through contact with saints, and through my own understanding, good values like love, humility, honesty, truthfulness, sharing. So these values which are described in all the scriptures, whether they are in the Ten Commandments or they are in the teachings of First the Bhagavad Gita, yeah, wherever it is. So these right values should flood my heart, and I should constantly look for opportunities to help. Maybe you can help financially. Maybe you can help somebody by labor. Somebody is building a house for humanity, Habitat for Humanity. I go and help with my labor or help with time. Somebody is sick in the hospital or in a nursing home. Nobody is visiting her. I go visit. So help can be done in many ways.
Can we volunteer for such things?
Yes, definitely, yes.
I really wanted
yeah,
to do
there
that.
Is a thing called Habitat for Humanity. They build houses for the poor. You can look them up online. And
this serving in the hospital type of thing also?
I'm sure there are volunteers in the hospitals, there are volunteers in nursing homes, there are volunteers in libraries, volunteers in schools. So you can look for whatever interests you and volunteer. Volunteer work is very good because that much time, at least you are not thinking about I and me and myself. So thinking about others. And my goal has to be single-pointed, that this is what I want, this and this and this and nothing alone else. Just as an Olympic athlete, just as somebody standing for election. 4 years from now, I'm going to stand. So he starts campaigning, he starts raising funds, he starts meeting people. So a spiritual seeker says, my goal is before I die to reach God. Because after I die, I don't know where I'll go. First of all, whether I'll have a next life or not, you know, Christians don't believe in it. But even if I believe in it, I don't know whether I'll be a human, whether I'll be a mosquito, a cockroach, whether I'll even have this knowledge. So while I'm alive in this life, I must reach God. And that should be the goal of everybody, that before I die, I must reach God. If I do good, if I don't, but at least that is my goal and I put the effort. And if your effort is sincere, if your thought is single-pointed, that's very important, then the Lord himself will come and help. That's what I have found, that in my personal journey, when your goal is clear and when your effort is sincere, then you will find unexpected benefit. Suddenly, people will come in your life or situations will come in your life where your spiritual journey will be expedited. So I owe so much gratitude to God. Every day I say, why me? I don't think I'm deserving of all the good fortune that he's heaped on us. But I just keep doing my duty. I keep showing up here. You know, even if two or three or four people come, because it's my own way of, you know, keeping up with these thoughts. It helps me. Sunday at the Gita class, we have a little better turnout. You know, we have 30, 40 people. But by teaching, it helps me to stay with these thoughts. Because last night I was reading these thoughts, then this evening when I came here. So the more time you spend with these spiritual thoughts, so the Lord will help if your effort is sincere. And I believe me, he is all more than willing. He means that Lord, that consciousness. They call it he, but it could be she or it or that. But that Lord or consciousness is always available to help. Your mind should be firm, your understanding should be clear, and your determination should be firm. Not that I have reached or I have gone anywhere, but constant, sincere effort always pays. And that, so sooner or later, these things will pay fruit. And then the mind, which is extrovert, has to be made introvert. So what do we mean by extrovert? Mind running after things, after objects, it should go inward. And that's what we do in meditation. We quieten the mind and connect it. And the more you can do that, slowly we have to reduce our contacts with the world. Unnecessary shopping, unnecessary buying things, unnecessary indulging you know, in maybe it could be food, it could be anything. Reduce your contacts with the world and then say, okay, now the extra time I have going to parties, you know, things like that. We all love that at one stage. After some time, if there is a party, I just go for an hour and leave. If there is no party on Friday, I'm very happy. I can sit home and meditate. I can teach. I can prepare for my class. I can study. So healthy detachment from the world and knowing that what is my goal. So the goal has to be very clear. And how to conquer the mind. See, when the thoughts come in the mind, like you asked the question, how to conquer, that will be next week. Because the next topic is that, how to conquer the mind, how to remove negative thoughts. And that will be covered in more detail. I don't have time because that's a whole chapter. So this question, a very good question that you have, and also you, about anger and about desire, will be covered next time.
That's interesting. I mean,
Right.
Never. That's a good thing. I mean,
yes.
I wish I'd
yes.
been doing that for.
It's okay. Whenever you start, we still have a lot of time. You know, we still have years to live. But the intellect is the discriminating, deciding factor. And where does it get this discrimination from? From the scriptures. From the teachings of the gurus and the scriptures. It's where it gets that. And so one of the things you could start doing is practice mind observation. We do that in meditation. We do that in meditation all the time, right? You watch the mind, and if the mind is running, you say, no, now is not the time to think about work, about family. Now I am meditating on God. So you are watching your mind and you are controlling your mind. So start watching your mind throughout the day. What is my mind doing? Like at this moment, my mind is listening, thinking, deciding. But it's relatively peaceful because I'm in this company of good people. But as soon as I go out, my mind either gets angry or gets agitated or gets desire prompted. And throughout the day, practice mind observation. So I am watching the mind. So somebody, there is a watcher who is watching the mind. So become an observer of your mind. And what is my mind doing? But this moment, my mind is calm. Then now my mind is angry. Why is it angry? Now my mind is happy. Now my mind is unhappy. Why is it unhappy? It didn't get what it wanted. So practice, and after a while you will automatically become a witness of the mind. What you do in meditation, do throughout the day. So a part of you will be watching the mind, and that becomes, with practice, it becomes automatic.
And it's amazing that when I came to the class today, I was planning to, at the end of the class, talk to you a little bit about mental agitation and, you know, why's, how's, consequences. And it's so interesting that today's entire class is about this subject.
Good, very good. Also, go home and read this chapter, because
okay,
Gurudev has
got the book, sir.
Yeah, 28, and then 29 talks more about that. So you can read ahead of time, and then we'll, of course, be doing 29 next week. And also the 27 is also about the mental ruts. So 27, 28, 29 exactly will answer your question. But I mean, I'll be happy to talk to you, but looks like you know, you have your answers. If you still have questions, so we can do that. Or if you read it, and then on January when we meet, it's up to you.
I'll start for a few minutes.
Sure.
But I think I have kind of...
Good.
Got it.
Very good.
It's everybody's problem. Mental dancing, oh my God. Honestly, I don't know if men have the same problem, but the women, I think, we are so involved with the family, the bondage, with the children, grandchildren, all this. And it's a monkey.
Yeah, that's true. Women have, you know, more attachment to family and things. Men have other problems. See, men have a problem of ego. Women have more attachment. To family, to wife, to husband, to children, to grandchildren. Men are not that attached, but the men's problem is ego, that I am somebody special and I can do it. So this I and my for a man is a very big problem, that I know what is right, I'm going to do it, nobody will stop me. And so that for the women, they don't have as much ego as men do. So that is a good point. Once the children grow up and, you know, slowly they can, if they can detach slowly For them to reach God is much faster because they don't have ego. They don't have this pride. And women's whole life is geared towards service. See, first you take care of your husband. Then you take care of your children. Then you take care of your father. Men don't take care of the parents. Women do. You take care of your grandchildren. You help your daughter when she needs help. So women is constantly giving. So for a woman to progress spiritually is much better, faster than men. Men's advantage is that we are single-pointed. See, men have this ability to be focused. And if a man decides that I want to progress spiritually, for him progress is faster. But so there are pluses and minuses of being a woman and being a man. You know, man is single-pointed. He can focus on this, but then his ego comes in the way. I'm so good. For a woman, she has less ego, but then she has these attachments holding her back. So I have to see where am I lacking in my spiritual journey. And so I have to do both, reduce attachments and reduce the ego, the perceiver feeling. So reduce both. And some people have more ego, so I have to cut down my ego. Lord is doing everything. I am not doing anything. By myself, I can do nothing. So that is for the man. Understand that Lord is the only one. And for a woman?
Love for Lord is so natural.
Right, right. And so transfer your love to the Lord, and I do what I can, but after that, I do what I can as much. But I cannot change my daughter's life, my granddaughter's life, my husband's life, my parents' life. I cannot change. All I can do is whatever I can do, I do. And after that, then spend time in devotion. So we can meditate for a while. We'll practice quietening the mind and turning it inward. So how do we quieten the mind? One is sit with a resolve that I am going to not let the mind take me on a ride, but I'm going to connect myself to the Lord within. Number one. Number two, sit erect with the body completely relaxed. A relaxed body is very much essential for quietening the mind. Relax the body from head to toe. First step is resolve, second is relax. Third step is take a few deep breaths with full attention on the breath. Take 5 deep breaths. After taking a few deep breaths, just watch the breath. Breath observation helps to quieten the mind. Complete attention on the breath. Continue to breathe slow and deep and watch the breath. Body is relaxed. Attention on the breath. The next step is quiet, alert, vigilant. Quieten the mind with the first four steps. Be very alert to the mind is what the mind is doing. The moment the mind runs in an opposite direction, away from the Lord within, bring it back. Very alert, very vigilant. So let the mind not go. If it goes, bring it back and turn the mind's attention to the Lord within. So practice being a witness, but alert and vigilant. I know what my mind is doing. Mind has to be directed inward. If it's running too much, breathe or chant Om mentally and then turn the mind inwards. Let us practice that for another 10 or 15 minutes. Continue to breathe, watch the mind. And keep it centered on the Lord's presence within. If it wanders, bring it back. Wanders, bring it back. Practice.